Adam, good evening to everybody. If you haven't found enough to do today, you weren't looking. Thanks to all of you who've given of your time and your energy, and in some cases of your food, in order to provide for us. We're going to think through a passage from the Lord's Word tonight and sing the invitation, and then have prayer for Travis after his announcement this morning. I was thinking while Adam was talking to Tecumseh a moment ago of which thing I would be more frightened about if he were asking me the questions, which would it be, how old are you? Or what did you preach on last week? Or say the pumpkin card. I'm not sure which one would be tougher. I appreciate those of you who've given your time today to help prepare our young men and women for the LTC activities. I know that a great deal of time and energy from the young people and from their mentors goes into that, and we are very grateful for the interest in both ways. We have several people to have in our prayers all this week, so please take notice of that and help us to see after one another. On Sunday evenings, we're looking at great questions of life that we find in different places through Scripture. This one is the fourth from the book of Genesis that we chose. If you think about them, has God really said, and then shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And then, of what use is a birthright to me? And now this one tonight, Joseph's question, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? You may have heard this question in its later form, and maybe asked of you instead of asked by you. And in its later form, it's, what were you thinking? It's too bad that we often overlook this question until it's put to us that way, and we're having to deal with the consequences of not having thought things through. It's a question that has an application to a lot more circumstances than just the one in which Joseph asked it. We'll consider his situation tonight, but you bear in mind, this is a question for us to ask in a lot of ways about attitudes, about words, and about actions. How can I do this great sin, this great wickedness and sin against God? The reality that I'd like to kind of call our attention to, mine as well as yours, is that we're not really fully human. And we're not ready to face life until we know the answer to this question and until we're able to ask this question of ourselves when it's time for it. In other words, unless we can get to the place where we have a spiritual guide in our heart of hearts, a spiritual landmark in our heart of hearts that we hold ourselves accountable to. And we'll think about it for a few minutes in these three ways. And in the first place, the way it's set here in Genesis chapter 39, this question turns out to be the determining factor at a moral intersection of a man's life. And therefore, at a moral intersection of all of history. If you consider the setting for it in Genesis 39, you remember Joseph's very recent past described for us in the first two verses. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. That story is, that scene is made all the more bittersweet by the fact that Joseph was there because of his own brother's jealousy and their scheming. And he only ended up down here in slavery in order, because it's the only way that his life could be saved at the time. So Joseph has in his past not only misfortune, but also some unfairness, and then the Lord was with him anyway, type of thing in his past. And then in his present circumstance, as described in verses 3 and following, his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From that time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Be wonderful to have a servant like Joseph, I suppose, that the Lord would bless your house just because he was there. The present circumstance, though, is still by the fact that Joseph is serving as a slave in an Egyptian's house, and an Egyptian officer at that. Joseph is working for someone else's good or someone else's benefit because he has to. The Lord is still with him in his present. And then you and I can glance forward, and if we look at verses 19, really on for the next few chapters in this book, Joseph's future is hanging out there before him, the things that are possible in his future. And you and I kind of remember in our minds, he gets kind of forgotten and mistreated again. He first gets kind of knocked down for doing the right thing and thrown in prison, and then he gets forgotten by someone he's done a good turn to, and it looks like a hopeless situation, like he'll just wither away in the dungeon somewhere. And then you find him before Pharaoh interpreting what God is going to do and advising Pharaoh, and then you find him set over all the land and second to Pharaoh himself. And then we find him being used by God to keep Israel and Israel's family alive. And we find out that not only did the providence of God stay with Joseph through some tough times, but also God needed to use Joseph's presence in that situation in order to keep promises that he had made to Abraham long before. So you kind of see, what if Joseph hadn't been able to ask his question? What if he hadn't had an answer for it? How would other people have been affected? And how would the purpose of God that needed to have unfolded, who would it have used instead? God would have worked his will in some way, but he would have had to use somebody but Joseph because of this question that we're thinking about here tonight. So look at the second part now. This determining factor at this moral intersection of his life turns out to be, and here's how I've described it, and we'll put it before you this way, the question to the answer that made the man. How many of you in here have seen Jeopardy before? Then you see the answer and you have to ask the question. You have to know the question. And it's kind of like this in Joseph's case. You notice with me here at Genesis 39 and last part of verse 6 on through verse 10. We read, "Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and after a time his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, 'Lie with me.' But he refused and said to his master's wife, 'Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he's put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?' And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her to lie beside her or be with her." At a time in history when a conviction about moral uprightness, where connections between people are concerned, it is a needed reminder to us that it is possible still to do the right thing. And Joseph is a case study in that. He knew the answer before Mrs. Potiphar tempted him. He refused. And he knew the answer because he knew the question. The question was, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And I think it's especially thought-provoking, it is to me at least, to realize the circumstances in which he deals with it this way. He says it this way even though he has been mistreated himself before. Even though life has been unfair to him in some ways, and even though he might have said, "I've been the victim long enough, I will live now," he still knows the answer because he knows the question. Even though he is away from home and nobody will know, his father's not there, his brothers are not there, no one he grew up with, none of the family is there. He's in a different country even. God was supposed to be the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But Joseph is in Egypt. And yet Joseph still knows the answer to the question. And it's the right question. And Joseph says it this way even though he's a young man. And the temptation is insistent against him. I'm not sure exactly how old Joseph is at this point, because I don't know how long he has been in Egypt at this point when this happened. He seems to have been around 17 when he was mistreated by his brothers. But obviously he's still a young man, and there would be the great temptations that go with the kind of desires God created us with. And here is someone tempting him, and it's someone who has the power that she can use against him if he doesn't conform to her wishes. And she approaches him day after day with the same kind of persuasion and the same kind of seductive intention. And yet Joseph says, "No, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And it's no wonder a little bit later on in Genesis 41 and verse 38, we have Pharaoh in a different setting, admittedly, but Pharaoh says, "Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?" We ought to take a look at what makes a man. A man is not someone who simply has his way with people, or uses someone else, or acts on every desire. A man is someone who can hold himself responsible to a compass that will guide him regardless of where he is and of what the temptations are. And it's remarkable to think of the way this proves to be true in Joseph's life, and then what a difference it makes in history because of it. So here's the determining factor at a moral intersection of life, and here's the question to the answer that leads to the answer that makes the man. And I'd like you to think about just briefly, and we'll make this shorter tonight. In this episode, the aspects of human dignity that are embodied in Joseph's question, one of the songs that Adam led us in singing spoke of the dignity of God. And serving God adds a dignity to a human being that really is important. You think about the aspects of it that you can see in Joseph at this point. First off, there is gratitude for the trust a man has placed in him. He is, the pressure is brought to bear on him, and you notice that Joseph refuses, and the first thing he says is, Potiphar has no concern about anything in the house. He's put everything under my charge. He's given me standing. He's given me privilege. He's entrusted me with responsibility. How could I betray that? How could I act as if I was not under any obligation to him after being treated in that way? Think of the kind of unselfishness and thoughtfulness that this and the dignity that this person is expressing in that statement. You know, unfortunately, this is a question not everybody thinks to ask with regard to the privilege and the opportunity that other people make available to them. And sometimes there's not a thought given to betraying or to misusing the kind of confidence that other people have placed in the individual. Secondly, the dignity of this man, you think about the respect that he shows for the woman and her ties to other people. Potiphar's wife is, I don't know her name, but I know that it would have been tempting, possibly, likely, to just look at her as a physical being who was offering a temptation to Joseph. The imagination might have suggested a liaison that could be hidden from the master's house. It could have been thought that this was something that both adults agreed to. No harm. But to Joseph, this is somebody's wife. And to do wrong toward her would be to harm other people as well. Joseph is taking responsibility that's loving responsibility to look out for another person's well-being. And not just to say, as long as he or she is agreeable, it's nobody else's business. Can you see the dignity in this man's behavior? And then third, Joseph expresses here an understanding of himself as a person who is responsible to God. Any sin is ultimately a sin against God, although you might think this involves Potiphar and his wife and Joseph. Joseph regards it as a sin against God because he regards himself as being accountable to God. And in that way, you can see the dignity in his life. When I look at these three ideas from Genesis 39, I remember the way Paul frames these kinds of matters in the New Testament in 1 Thessalonians 4. He's writing here to Christians in the Greek world of the time who were surrounded by all the kinds of temptation that Mrs. Potiphar was presenting in the story here. And in 1 Thessalonians 4, Paul has to reason with these new Christians about the will of God for their holiness, that they abstain from sexual immorality. He gives three reasons. He says, first, that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor. That's important for human dignity. He says, second, if you look down at verse 6, that no one transgress and wrong his brother in this matter. Another human being is somebody's daughter or sister or wife or mother or someone's son or brother or husband or father. And that's to be considered if we have any dignity as persons. And then third, Paul says, because the Lord is an avenger in all these things, as we told you beforehand and solemnly warned you. He's an avenger because he made persons in his image, and then he established marriage for honor and for companionship and joyful fulfillment. And he regards that as being under his protection and hold us accountable in that way. These are ideas or convictions that are certainly not in keeping with the culture, but they're a part of Scripture from Genesis on. And you can surely see that in the case of Joseph here. So here's the choice that makes all the difference. An answer that was known ahead of time, and then dignity that's added to a man's life because of it. We could use a strong dose of that in our world today. And I'll leave you with this. Joseph's question in that moment of crisis illustrates for us two things that we must have if we're to be ready for life, and two things that promise us triumph if we do have them. The first is an operating conscience. Conscience is what holds us accountable to what we know to be good and right. In Romans 2 in the New Testament, Paul's actually discussing the pagan world, the ones even who don't know God at the time, and he mentions in Romans 2, verse 14, that those who do not have the law, by nature do what the law requires. They are a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law. And he says, they show that the work of the law is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or excuse them. On that day, when according to my gospel, God judges the secrets of men by Christ Jesus. The conscience is the umpire of your life. It either approves or disapproves of thoughts, words, and actions. Respect it. And take care of it, honor it, because it's like your lifetime GPS for where you are and where you need to go and need to be. Why was Joseph able to consider what God would want even in Egypt? Because he had a conscience. And then to go with it, we need the second thing, an appropriate conviction to guide the conscience. The conscience has to be educated and informed and trained. And this is where faith choices, faith convictions come into play. The question of modern life is how we're going to have a functioning, operating conscience without anything that informs it and says this is right and this is what ought to be done. That's the place God means for His will to play in our lives. So if we ask ourselves, if we're able to ask ourselves the question behind the answer that'll make all the difference, then maybe we won't have to answer, "What were you thinking?" Maybe it'll keep us out of stuff like that. Remember the question. And remember that God has given His Son in order to make it possible for us to have clean consciences so that we can serve the living God. Hebrews 9 teaches us that, one of the great benefits of the work of Christ. Tonight, you might be here wanting to become a Christian. We'd love to hear you make the good confession and then to help you to put the Lord on in baptism. You might be here needing us to also to pray about something. If that's the case, we encourage you at that. No, without putting pressure on you, we encourage you. And if we can help you, then would you please come while we stand and sing together.